Welcome to the Internet Advisor, the place where you don't have to be a geek to find answers to your computer and Internet questions. Each week since 1998, the Internet Advisor crew has been bringing you knowledgeable and interesting guests from the digital world and talking about the hot topics. During our second hour, we try to focus on answering your questions in ways that maybe even your grandma can understand. The door is always open for you at InternetAdvisor.net, our homepage, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts for this week's edition of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, your co-host. We've got a great lineup of people here in our studios. We're going to be here for the next 3 hours. That's right, until 6 o'clock. The last hour will be open for your calls. These first 2 hours, we're going to be looking at 2012, some of the key things that happened. This hour, we've got some experts with us. They'll be talking about some very special aspects, including security and turning points in 2012. So don't miss a minute. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor Live. This time on our standard-bearing station, which is WJR 760 AM in Detroit. We're delighted to be here, as well as you folks listening to us across the network. A very happy holiday to you and a very happy new year. We all can breathe a little sigh of relief. And let me greet my our folks in studio here. Eddie Riddell, good to be here with you.
Always great, Foster.
The Mayans were wrong.
Of course they were. The world ended 6 years ago.
Oh, that's it. All right, we're all kind of this is a DVR actually, folks. It's a massive DVR. We're all just playing back. Shane Hamlin's in us, Wind Studio with us. Shane, good to have you here.
Hey, my birthday was on that day.
That's right.
So I saved you all.
So when you blew out your candles, nothing else happened.
Nothing else happened. Except there was a glitch that I've seen. Oh, you know, we're already gone. You know, the whole Matrix thing.
That's right. That's true. Let's not go there. And also with us is Cal Carson. Cal, good to have you in studio.
You know, I'm really disappointed about the whole 21st thing because, you know, I got a Chevy truck. I was waiting to get my Twinkie out and you know, wait for the end of the world to come.
But there are no more Twinkies.
That's right.
Oh, that's probably the reason why they canceled the end of the world, so we couldn't do it.
Did you see the one cartoon that was out there, these two Mayans, you know, talking to one another, and he said, the one guy who's standing next to the calendar, he says, you know, I just ran out of room at 2012. He said, but the other guy says, that'll drive some people in the future crazy when they get to that, you know. Well, just ran out of room for numbers.
I saw one just like that, too, and it was one Mayan talking to the other one. He goes, why don't you take a break, you know? You've been working on this thing for a long time, and he's got the calendar in front of him. He goes, I guess it won't hurt. It won't be the end of the world.
The other thing that got me about that was that the big calendar, the big stone calendar they show there, often like on Facebook and other places, it's not the Mayan calendar, it's the Aztec calendar. Mm-hmm. And it stands, I've seen it in person at Mexico City, the Archaeology Museum. It's enormous. It stands a good 10 feet tall, at least 10 feet tall and 10 feet across.
Now, which one is this, the Aztec
or the
Mayan?
Aztec calendar. Okay. It's a huge, I think basalt is the stone it's made out of. Mm-hmm. And it's about 2.5 feet thick, I think. It's just enormous. And it's beautiful. And when it was originally done, you may have seen some of these pictures of it. It was painted with very vivid colors. But now it's just the raw stone. But the interesting thing about it is it depicts what the Aztecs thought had been the four previous ends of the world. I think it was fire and wind and water and earthquake, I think, was one of the ones. And it was interesting. That was their destruction calendar, but it wasn't the Mayans. It was the Aztecs. Anyhow. So, hey, all right, let's find out, guys, what technology did you get for Christmas? And what new things are you playing with now?
Nothing over here. I ordered from my son. He has an iPod Touch, mm-hmm. and he cracked the display. So I figured how I'm going to spend my Christmas break is taking it apart and replacing the digitizer and the phone jack. Ooh. Well, I have not received it. It's been over 2 weeks after my Amazon order, and I'm about ready to make some phone calls.
This is the ultimate tinkerer's.
He was supposed to be here. He was guaranteed to be here before Christmas.
Oh, dear. So. Yeah, mine came a little late. But how about you, Shane? Matter of fact, you've got yours in your hand there.
You know, after a couple shows ago, and we were talking about the Windows 8 phone, I did get an HTC Windows 8 phone, and I absolutely love it.
Now, why did you go that route? Because so many other people, most other people, have gone the routes of either an Android phone or one of the iOS iPhones.
Well, I didn't want to be one of those Apple people. You know, I look at them and I think, you know, I'm not an Apple guy.
Oh, dear.
What, you don't like dreadlocks?
You know, the whole thing. You know, I look at them and they're so cool and, you know, they talk about their apps and kind of they want to leave you out of it a little bit. And I went and I got the good.
You're actually picking a fight, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm waiting.
He's not rising to the bait, though.
No.
Go ahead.
You know, so I went and got the 8X, which is the HTC version. It's you got better reviews than a Nokia, and that's kind of why I went with it.
Yep.
Faster. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely, you know, I live in a Windows world.
Yep.
I do business in a Windows world. My personal life, I do, you know, Windows.
Yep.
And this made sense.
And it actually, even though it is not the same software, the look and feel
correct
with the tiles, the live tiles in particular, is very much the same as you would find on a Surface RT, on the new Surface Pro that's coming out, which are their laptops, and also a Windows 8. Very much the same feel, if not the same application.
And so easy to set up. You know, surprisingly, because I tie a lot of stuff into with Google myself.
Yeah.
And you would think Google, Microsoft, and as soon as I put my main, you know, email in there, it took over and did the rest.
You have to have a Microsoft ID, I think, don't you? It's called a Windows ID or
Windows Live ID. Yeah, you do. And I've always had one.
Yep, me too.
But that was always kind of associated with my Google ID, and it seemed to my Twitter, my Facebook, my Google, my contacts for. My whole life came into the phone. It was just a touch of a button.
Yeah, but for this one phone that Microsoft has, they've made a lot of mistakes in the past. They had their Microsoft Windows phone.
Yeah.
I mean, the 5.1, the 6, the 7. People forget about the 7, and that wasn't very much of an innovation.
I'm working on
this one, you know, it's much different.
It's
much better. I think they finally got something
right. The revolution really, I have the Windows Phone 7 that I've been trying out and on a Nokia 900. What I have to say about Windows 8 is that is really polishing this system.
Yes.
It really has cured a lot of things. I would never recommend a Lumia 900 to anybody. It's the worst phone I've ever used. I love the operating system, however, and Nokia has solved a lot of those problems with the 920. When we come back, I'm going to talk to Cal a little later on the show. I want to find out about what you got for Christmas. And actually, I got something I think you'll be having a little fun with as well. Anyway, you're listening to a very special program here. It's called the Internet Advisor, in case you just kind of bumped into us. We're going to be here until 6 o'clock, so please do stick around. Coming up in just a minute, we're going to be talking with one of our old friends, who is Mike Amon, a man who is both a serial entrepreneur and a very interesting man to talk to about technology. If this happens to be one of your first times for joining us on the Internet Advisor, kind of bumped into us, we're a little bit earlier than we normally are on the air, then please make a point of visiting internetadvisor.net. That is a treasure trove of information for you. We not only have the show notes from this week, and there's going to be a lot of stuff in there for you. We have some news items down below. We also have consistently our forums, past podcasts, a toolkit that Ed put together. Lots of great, great resources. And somebody who was an addition to our crew this year, Emily Hay, has her social media button there along the top as well. So lots of resources. Speaking of resources, one of our favorite resources in terms of kind of like catching the trends, taking the pulse of what's going on in technology, is a gentleman named Mike Amon, who is with us right now. And Mike, thank you so much for joining us from, I hope, sunny California.
It is sunny, and happy holidays to all your crew.
Thank you very much, Mike. Mike, along with Gary Baker, was there at the beginning, in many ways, of Internet access for folks here in our fair state of Michigan, and really around the country, when you folks began your first ISP. Tell us, what was that again?
Well, it was Online Technologies, and we were one of the first to get in the game way back in 1996.
Wow.
So I'm a grandfather now, but we became a grandfather of the internet by launching that yeah, venture.
Right. And it has gone on, changed hands, but boy, you guys really were part of that pioneer group that got the world connected. So, Mike, well, we've asked you to come on. By the way, Mike right now is the president and CEO of San Joaquin Partnership, which is out in the Central Valley of California. Am I right?
You're absolutely right.
Okay. And that you are, is it, tell me what you folks do there, just kind of a quick background.
Well, we build businesses. We grow our existing base and attract new companies sure. into this area. And I'm kind of straddled here. What you should understand is that we have a huge agricultural base in the Central
mm-hmm.
Valley,
mm-hmm.
but I'm straddled right with about 80 miles into San Jose. So I have the Silicon Valley on one side of me producing all this new technology. And on the other side, we're producing some of the finest agricultural products and beverages. Wine is one of my favorites in the world. So it's a very interesting place to be.
You must have, and you have lots of happy cows around there. At least that's what the ad
we
said.
We do. A lot of milk. It's one of our big commodities right here in this particular county.
Well, yeah. Mike, I can imagine that you, as a person who's involved in developing businesses, probably been at, you are watching trends. What were, if you look back on 2012, were some of the key turning points, do you think, happened in technology that will affect the next year?
Well, I'm going to confine most of this to Internet-related, mm-hmm. as we talked before. And just a couple comments on what you were discussing before I came online. You know, cracked displays, which Ed was talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
We have a business in Silicon Valley that started up just to do that, Ed, so maybe you want to compete. and then you guys talked about phones, and
yeah.
you like this phone or that phone yeah. because of the operating system. But really, what I'm anticipating is there will be a Facebook phone, an Amazon phone.
Really?
Just like Google has a phone.
Right.
The major players are going to also get out there with their own phone that leads you to their products and services as such. So.
Oh, okay. So it would be like a gateway for their particular services. That would be the hook with it?
You've seen it with tablets, and now you're going to see it with phones.
Hmm.
Not that there's, to me, with tablets becoming smaller and phones growing larger,
yeah.
there's a blending here that's happening. But I think you're going to see custom-made phones by major players on the Internet.
Well, it's interesting, Mike, when you're saying custom-made phones. And guys, feel free to chime in and with your own reactions on this. You're not talking necessarily about a different form factor than we have out now.
Well, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. I think form factors. I just read an article on Apple's mini sellout in China during the first week, and so I'm wondering what's happening over there. They're not buying the large tablet, but the mini. And
I have heard the same thing, that the iPad mini is really kind of cannibalizing in many ways some of the iPad sales.
So all you have is Skype on a mini, and you have a phone.
Yes.
So you have to kind of, you know, I think this area is going to be very interesting. It's a kind of a signpost. It's not a trend yet.
Yep.
But there's going to be some blending of phones and tablets in the near future.
Okay.
And I think they're going to be customized or, cars used to have a designer name on them, and you'd buy a Harley Ford F-100 or
mm-hmm.
something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of where we're going. But let's look at some bigger trends here.
Okay.
I think one over the holiday season that really caught my eye was Walmart bought 2 billion Facebook ads. So
wow.
I mean, social media is here to stay as a consumer market opportunity. And you'll remember approaching a year ago, General Motors opted out of Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's kind of a change in mentality here by more of the consumer goods, and maybe that's more appropriate than cars and trucks.
Ah, okay.
But certainly I think buying 2 ads per person that are members of Facebook is a big signpost for all of us to look at.
You mentioned Facebook a couple of times. Do you see them? They haven't been very successful financially since they had their IPO, their stock offering this year. Do you see them becoming that big a player then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And unlike some others, I bought and sold the stock and made money. But and I think there's going to be some other opportunities there in the future.
Okay.
And you say from a stock offering standpoint, it wasn't favorable, but they're making money, and they mm-hmm. have a platform where they're going to be able to make a lot more money. And you're going to see others. The competitors are getting locked out of this opportunity to reach that consumer group. Since Walmart comes in Thanksgiving and buys 2 billion ads over the whole holiday selling season. So you know, what's the reaction to Target? What's the reaction to Best Buy? What's the reaction to some of these others who have their own web presence and have their own way of distributing, picking up at the store and all these other kinds of methods? I think that's a wake-up call. That's what I call a signpost.
Okay. We have a couple of responses here. Shane?
Just basically, it's, you know, smart move by Walmart. I mean, there's only so much ad space on Facebook, right?
Mm.
Spend that kind of money, you get a majority of it, locks the others out. I mean, great move, in my opinion.
Cal?
Does it ever get to a point where on the Internet you'll have a monopoly of any particular thing? Like, is Facebook considered the monopoly of social media, or will there be, or do you consider there's other valuable players out there?
Yeah, there was an article in Wall Street Journal just last week, I think, or within the last 2 weeks, where Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Walmart were the four big guns that are sort of going to face off during the next couple years and seeing who's going to be able to grab that consumer market. Google, of course, has some of its own products, but it would be a method, a distribution system. And the other real trend that I'm seeing, and this is going into the ground, we have some Amazon facilities popping up in California now that they're paying sales tax to the state, and it's all driven by Prime, which is the overnight delivery. And so Walmart needs to get into overnight delivery, and all the rest, any of the major retailers, are going to have to do that. And that supply chain and that's automation linked into the web and the ability to dominate social media as a method of sending stuff to the consumer, not only from an ad perspective, but also being able to quickly develop it.
Wow. Mike, you've given us a lot to chew on. As a matter of fact, we've got this on tape now, as they used to say. So we'll bring this back around during the year and examine it again. But thank you so much, Mike Amon, for being with us and for sharing these turning points and casting an eye towards next year as well. Have yourself a very happy new year, Mike.
And to you.
All right. Take care. Back in just a moment, talk to Richard Steen about security. Welcome back to the Internet Advisors. Kind of like supervising the playground at a great school in here sometimes. Well, the friendly rival we have between the Windows people and the Apples people, it's a ball. Anyway, welcome back to the Internet Advisor. This is our look back at the year 2012, and to help us to analyze kind of some of the things that have been happening there, we've invited some people to be with us, and one of them is, I'm delighted to have him in studio, is Richard Steenen, who is a security expert. He's been a frequent guest in our program here. He's an international cybersecurity analyst, and well, there's so many other titles, but an author as well. Richard, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be here, Foster.
Now, what was the gift that you got, the tech gift, which you said has transformed your life?
Oh, yeah. A life-changing gift from my wife, Karen, a EWE 4000S.
EWE 4000? Okay, I give up.
So this is a electronic wind instrument. So it's shaped like a clarinet, and it's got touch-sensitive keys, and it's a MIDI, full MIDI, and you can blow into it, and it detects, you know, how hard you're blowing, and it's got all these sound effects, and it's got 8 octaves, I think.
So it was like a recorder in the sense of the way it
the
looks
shape.
Like?
Yeah.
The shape was
yeah.
of a recorder,
yep.
But you can get different kinds of sounds out of it?
Yeah, you plug your headphones into it and play right on that, or you can plug it into an amp or into a MIDI keyboard.
So do you sound like Peter Frampton, you know, or that
yeah.
sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
Yeah, you're all over it.
This has transformed his life, and but so it doesn't you would have to have a speaker system to hear it, right? Because it's electronically produced. Okay.
Yeah. And I, you know, I was
so like practicing a violin. Not everybody has to suffer through practicing.
Exactly. So now I can practice and get back up to speed because I used to play clarinet for 18 years.
Wow.
I played clarinet.
Oh, wow.
And now I can get back to, up to speed, but I don't need to build the muscles for the embouchure and all the rest. I just need to
learn the what,
the
please? For the
for your embouchure, the muscles in your mouth for playing clarinet takes about a year and a half to build up.
That's a reed instrument thing, you know.
Okay, I know with trumpet, trumpets, you know, the lips have to be
same with it'll be the same with a trumpet, and you can actually program this to have trumpet fingerings as well. So so any wind player can just click some buttons.
It's called EWI. How's that spelled?
EWI for electronic wind instrument.
EWI 4000S.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, my sister-in-law had an embouchure. She used to keep all her clothes in
it. I think there was an armoire. In any case, Rich, thanks so much. We had you in before talking about security and cyber warfare and things like that. There have been a massive number, I think, I don't know if it was a record number, but it seems like a massive number of data leaks this last year. Do you see that changing at all as we go forward? Or the lessons not seem to have been learned?
Yeah, I see some hope on the horizon, but there's certainly not going to be any change. We're going to have a lot more data breaches exposed, and in, at least in the public eye, in the coming year. A lot of that, you know, the data breaches have always gone on, but you know whether or not people actually report that they occurred is changing.
Right?
So there's commercial entities, since a California law was passed almost 10 years ago now, 1386, had to, if they had customers in California, had to reveal that
they had to let them know that something had happened to their data. Oh, okay.
And since most people have customers in California, a populous state, everybody started doing it. And then, and keep in mind when we talk about cyber legislation going forward, that Congress has been working on a data breach law to supersede the 45 different state laws.
Oh, okay.
They've been working on that for 7 years and haven't gotten it yet.
And in the meantime, the bad guys get more and more skilled at doing this.
Right.
But the bad guys are mostly overseas. So what U.S. laws wouldn't apply to them unless a U.S. citizen was silly enough to try to do a data breach, which, you know, there's laws against that.
Yep. And we're working on the international scene. Yes. So I've been traveling quite a bit, and I actually had the opportunity to attend the International Conference on Cyberspace in Budapest in early October. And that's one of the reasons everybody's getting together, is to talk about how can we have jurisdiction.
A good point. We could pass a really tough law here or in England or wherever. Doesn't matter, because people live above that.
Exactly.
In that outside middle space there. Someplace there.
I see a movie there.
Yeah.
Cyber Attack Force. You know, I mean, really.
I think there's been several.
And a lot of books, too.
A lot of books about it. Yeah, Cyber Stiletto was one.
Hugely popular.
Plug one. Well, has there been any success in getting the bad guys? Are we getting better at that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see, you know, for instance, if you watch the roundup of the anonymous actors, and particularly the members of a group called LulzSec, where they use traditional, you know, kind of infiltration, turning one of the key members and then using him as a confidential informant. You know, so the techniques of law enforcement are slow, you know. So it took, you know, 8 to 12 months in order to start rounding them up and arresting them. And that's always been the case and always will be the case. Whereas cyber criminals are extremely fast. I mean, they change their methods overnight.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden there are evolutions in their technology and the applications of them, you know, weekly. So it's almost impossible.
And they also count on things like an email blast or, I mean, in other words, just blowing out tons of data and maybe catching half a percent in the net, but that represents millions of dollars.
Exactly.
So, and they keep on doing that. So, what do you see as some of the major threats? Let's say for enterprise now, as you've been dealing with it on an international level, talking to companies, what are they most worried about?
Yeah. So they recognized just in the last year, 2 years, that they are targets of attackers who want their information specifically.
Right.
So, which is way different than
industrial espionage, essentially?
Industrial espionage, and some of it's economic espionage.
Okay.
And so they might have some information, be it credentials of certain people, or the case of RSA in 2011, they had, you know, a secure way of logging in that was used by the defense industrial base. So the attackers went after that specifically at the company RSA and got it, and then used it immediately on trying to break into Lockheed. So, you know, this level of sophistication, and if you talk to RSA, as I have, you know, for my upcoming book, they said they could tell that the team attacking them, as soon as they detected that some countermeasures were being deployed, brought in the A-team. And, you know, it was almost like a military operation, and they had to bring in the crack team in order to get the information out before it was too late.
Who are the bad guys? Can you localize it to a nation to say it's them or it's them or it's us?
Sure. So all the espionage-like stuff that we're seeing, frankly, comes from China. And it may not be the actual, you know, People's Liberation Army that's doing it, but it's certainly agents of them inside university systems that are exfiltering data just wholesale. And then, you know, they're probably, I'm sure if you were to look at the sales of supercomputers, you could see them being purchased by these groups that are trying to analyze all the data they're stealing.
So it's not only our movies and DVDs and CDs that are being stolen.
Right.
Yeah, when you go over there. Property. I mean, how many international businessmen do I work with, and they're just, they come back and look at all the stack of movies I got when I was over in China.
Disc.
Yeah, they're just disc, and look at, I got them for a buck each.
Yeah, but let's be honest. I mean, the sword cuts both ways. We're doing it on our side, too, aren't we?
You know, I used to be a naysayer. I'd say, oh, you know, because even people inside Washington would say, well, everybody's doing it. And I'd say, I've seen no evidence whatsoever that the NSA has a clue about this stuff.
National Security Agency. Right?
National Security, our spy agency. And, you know, so I think they're just bragging.
When you say they haven't got a clue about it, we don't have, I mean, that kind of scares me. We don't have our counterpart in terms of
that's what I used to think
until Iran incident, right? I would
imagine. Until June 1st of 2012. So if you're talking about turning points, that was it in my arena. And in June 1st, 2012, a journalist at the New York Times published a complete expose of who was behind Stuxnet. And Stuxnet, of course, is the most sophisticated malware ever launched and successful at slowing down Iran's nuclear production capability. Right. And that the Obama administration was basically commanding it.
Mm-hmm. It had begun in the Bush administration, am I right?
Right, exactly.
And then if I remember the narration of it, as you were talking about it before with us on the show, but then it really was executed in the Obama administration. Are you confident then that, along the lines of what Cal is saying, that we are up to snuff in terms of the U.S.?
Yeah. Now I am, especially with both within our spy agency and the military. And you can see the military positioning over this past year, 2012, which is another high water mark. They've been creating the legal environment for them to engage in cyber attacks because, frankly, it's been illegal. And they haven't done, if they've done it, it's, you know.
They didn't want to admit, hey, Stuxnet was mine. Yeah.
Right.
I did that one.
It's okay for NSA to do that. It's perfectly legal for the NSA to spy and to break into computers in other countries. But the military wasn't allowed to. So just about 3 weeks ago, the president issued a secret directive that evidently clears the way for the military to engage in at least, you know, counterattacks. So if they see somebody attacking them, they can turn around and attack back.
Now, Rich, you're going to stick around for the next hour, so we're going to continue talking about some of this, but I wanted to get this out in this concentrated form, and you're here. How about for consumers, the people who are listening to this show right now? Is this going to be a tougher year for us? Are we better prepared? Like Windows 8, I understand, has got some great security built into it, woven into it.
I think we're getting better. You know, like you say, Windows 8, all the Apple products, everything except Android is getting better fast.
Except Android.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because that's the leading mobile software out there.
Right.
That's scary. Okay, Rich Estina's with us. We're going to continue to talk with him throughout the next hour. But coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk specifically about Windows 8 with Aaron Wimette from Apex Digital. He is our Windows 8 man. Thank you once again for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. And for those of you listening live with us, hey, in case you just kind of bummed into us and what in the world is this? It's the Internet Advisor, normally heard in our flagship station, WJR, 760 AM in Detroit, from 4 to 6 on Saturday afternoons. And throughout the Michigan Radio Network, we're heard at various times in 5 different cities throughout the fair state of Michigan, in Grand Rapids, Lansing, Saginaw, Kalamazoo, and Muskegon at this time. Usually on the weekends, on Saturdays or Sundays. And so thank you, folks, by the way, for joining us as well. Once again, InternetAdvisor.net is a place where you'll find our show notes, a lot of the information that we're talking about on our program today. And we also have a Facebook page, so tune into that as well. All right, in looking at this past year, Well, I think in terms of sales, both Google and Apple, in terms of devices, have certainly grabbed the spotlight and the dollars and cents, certainly. I think in many ways, in terms of, especially in this last half of the year, Microsoft, because of some enormous changes they have made, have really grabbed the kind of the consciousness of people in technology, certainly technology writers. With us right now is somebody who's been a regular with us, and that's Aaron Wimmett. He's the IT director for Apex Digital, which is a company that consults with companies on how to integrate Microsoft products in particular. And matter of fact, just won an award from them recently. Aaron, thanks so much for being back and for being Windows 8 man.
Well, thanks for having me again, guys.
Hey, by the way, we've asked people just kind of quickly if they got any good digital toys for Christmas. How about you?
Well, I got a couple. My new favorite is I got a Kindle Fire the other day as a Christmas present. That's kind of neat. I know it's not in the Microsoft realm, but it is definitely a neat toy.
Mm-hmm.
It's really an interesting answer to the iPad.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of getting used to that, enjoying it. I'm going to try and hide it from my kids long enough to fully appreciate it.
Good luck. What was your other toy?
Let's see. I got actually for my kids, we bought them some iPod Touches. So again, I can reclaim my iDevices.
There you go. Well, we brought you in here as Windows 8 man. Now, I know, by the way, do you work with a Windows Surface at all?
We have started to see some of them in the field. I have one customer in particular that went out to Microsoft to the developers conference and came back with a bunch of Surface tablets.
Okay.
So right now they just have the Surface RT tablets, but the Pros are coming out next month. So I'm eagerly awaiting that, trying to determine if it's going to be the tool of choice for me.
It sounds like from all the advance. I mean, the hardware I've heard on the Windows Surfaces is very good. Matter of fact, somebody even said, this is a compliment they paid about, they said it was very Apple-esque. In the sense of the industrial design on it, mm-hmm. and durability and everything else. They said it's very, very good. Now, here's a question. I know, Shane, you're selling Windows 8 devices in your shop, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Aaron, people have been getting, maybe Windows, a new laptop that has Windows 8 on it, and it has a touch screen on it. Can you help people, maybe who are listening to us, just kind of quickly, what are some quick tips you have for people who are just kind of learning to get into Windows 8?
You know, I would say that if they were previously experienced in Windows, so they're familiar with Windows 7 or Windows Vista or XP.
Right.
The probably the biggest change for them is obviously the lack of the start button.
Mm-hmm.
But on Windows keyboards there is still a start key, mm-hmm. so you can hit that and you can just start typing for whatever it is that you're looking for. So right. if you're one of those people who still know the names of their applications, or you still think you know what you're looking for, you can start typing it. And what's really neat about that is it filters based on applications and control panel utilities.
Right.
So if you want to change like the power settings on your notebook,
mm-hmm.
you can hit the start button and start typing in power, and you get a whole list of options that are available for changing what happens when you shut the lid or. The different battery modes and sleep modes.
So there's a lot more. You don't have to, go to an upper right corner and click on help or something like that. You can just literally anywhere you are on the screen start typing whatever you want.
I think that's probably for people who have keyboards attached to their devices,
mm-hmm.
Even if it is a touch device, I think there's still a lot of benefit to being able to type and really find and accelerate the speed at which you can find the applications and configuration options that you're looking for.
Now, Aaron, I've heard it said, and maybe Shane, you can chime in. I don't know if you've had a chance to have hands-on with a lot of these devices, the Windows 8 devices.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. I have one right here.
I have heard that Windows 8 works best with touch.
Yes.
You would agree?
In my opinion, it does.
How about you, Aaron?
I would agree. I mean, it's designed for that interface. The buttons are big. The start menu tiles are large,
mm-hmm.
for that reason to be able to navigate them with your fingers.
Yeah, feel free to disagree with me, Aaron. I mean,
I know.
And I would agree.
And I would think that corporate America is not going to be upgrading its laptop and desktop environment with Windows 8. Pretty much.
Not yet.
For that reason.
Well,
They're not yet. Maybe a Windows 8.5 or something.
But. Yeah, and I heard that that's already in the works, Aaron. Am I right?
Yeah, there's you know,
it's called Blue.
Usually,
I think
a Windows development cycle is usually 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So even before Windows 8 shipped, you know, they've already solidified the teams and they're working on the next version already.
Well, Windows 8 seems to have also transformed Microsoft. I mean, it seems to be a company that's moving much faster. Before, it was like the, you know, the Queen Elizabeth or one of those massive ocean liners that it took a long time
to turn.
To turn. But they
that's really been part of, I think, part of the whole internet development economy, if you will, is when you when you have other companies out there like Google or Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn, you know, all of these companies are, you know, they're really providing you some sort of a software as a service. Mm-hmm. You know, so Google's providing you a search engine service. They provide you mail services and you know, application services. And their speed and the rapidity of their development is incredible. They can just churn out. They're not sitting there baking a release for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing these incremental updates.
Well,
you know, every week or two, you know, you get a few new features.
Exactly. And I've heard. Pardon me, Aaron. I've heard that I think it's called Blue is the code name for the next. It'll be like Windows 8.5 or whatever you want to call it. Am I right?
I believe that is correct.
And it's supposed to be coming out fairly early in the year.
I haven't really seen too much on the you know in its release cycle yet. But,
I heard like first quarter, maybe even beginning of second quarter, that we're going to see a pretty quick turnaround. And that leads me to a quick question for you: is what are some of the things you would like to see in Windows 8 that aren't there now?
Yeah, this is going to sound horrible, but
start.
One thing I would like to see when it comes to the to managing corporate environments, is a way to get back to that legacy interface.
Yeah, like a little switch, so that when it's deployed,
some sort of a toggle switch or a policy setting, you can say, you know, I want all of the security features and I want all of the, you know, performance benefits and all these great new things that come with Windows 8. But, you know, my users aren't ready for it yet. Or my customers aren't ready for it.
Get me out of Metro or whatever they're calling it nowadays.
My users aren't ready for that, and I don't have the, you know, I don't have the cycles to be able to train them yet on it.
Oh, okay. Now, hang on.
Good point.
Shane is shaking his head.
No. When he said the training, I get the whole training thing.
Yes,
I do.
Yes.
But why bother? You know, why bother go back? I mean, let's just stay with Centavin and be done with it then.
Well, it's just not overtraining us. It's training. You have to train the entire world. You got to train India, China, all of our help desks have to be trained.
Well, things change. Things move on. This is like a big step in the future of computing to get people used to using their hands.
You know, and Microsoft had to do this.
They had to.
Yeah.
They had to do something. They did something revolutionary. And everyone else will follow. They'll have to.
Aaron, just quickly, do you think this is a make it or break it year? This year coming up, 2013?
I think every year from now on is.
Yeah, good point. Well put. Hey, Aaron, we're looking forward to having you with us during the new year. I think especially during January as people are kind of trying to figure out this new system. Be back with us as Windows 8, man. Can we look forward to that?
Absolutely.
All right. Aaron Guimet, thank you so much for being with us from Apex Digital, always helping people and helping us to help you with Windows 8. He'll be back again in the new year. Happy New Year to you, Aaron. Thanks so much
for
being with us.
All right,
bye-bye. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and then we are going to hold these guys' feet to the fire, except Shane, because he didn't have a prediction from last year. But we've got the rest of them on tape. We're going to be playing their predictions from January of 2012 about what the year would look like and see what it sounds like in terms of what really happened. Coming up on the Internet Advisor next hour.
Whether you're listening to us on one of our affiliates through Michigan Talk Radio or through our podcast, contact us by email if you have a question through our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Or put your question into one of our forums. Now let's rejoin the Internet Advisor team for the second hour of our podcast.
Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Wait a minute, you say. Hold it. I thought you were on from 4 until 6. Well, today we've had some extra time. We've got a great program lined up. We're going to be sharing the predictions that our staff here made about what was going to happen in technology in 2012 and find out how close they have been. Also, take a look at the year with their expert eyes and see what were some of the key turning points. Great show lined up for you. Stick around for the Internet Advisor. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, or if you're just joining us right now, thank you very much for being here. And if you've downloaded this podcast, welcome as well. Glad to have you with us. By the way, internetadvisor.net is the place where you'll find our show notes and all the goodies that we gather during the program. And let me introduce our roundtable of tech experts again that we're going to hold accountable. Mr. Ed Rudell.
You know, I have my wife to hold me accountable enough. I really don't need it here. She always tells me I'm right or she's right and I'm wrong and just get used to it.
Get used to it.
I'm right. Sorry. So I got to listen to it from you now?
No, you're just going to listen to your own stuff.
I know. All. And you're going to prove that I'm wrong.
No. Actually, you guys were, I think, very close.
Okay, well, good.
Shane Hamlin, also with us in studio. Although, Shane, you get away here. Without having to be, you know, having your feet held to the fire. However, you'll be with us, I hope, next week.
I have predictions.
Oh, okay. Oh,
no. That I did, I can just tell you.
Okay, we can tell.
No, I'm just kidding. Cheat a little bit.
Cheat a little bit on this. Yeah. Your crystal ball is very clear. Rich Steen is going to stay in studio with us. He's with us continuing from this last hour. Rich, thanks so much for being with us. He's an international security expert and, of course, has been with us a number of times. Good to have you here.
Great to be here, and I'm out of the prediction business. So you can't hold my feet to the fire.
You're an analyst. You look at it from the other direction.
Exactly.
All right, very good. Cal Carson also here, our man from Apple.
I did not predict anything last year.
All right. Having said that, Rich Lisinski, our engineer, is now going to, we should have a drum roll or a flourish or something like that. This, I put this together. These were sound bites from our prediction program at January of this year. And Gary
help
Baker,
me.
Of course, was part
help
of that.
Me.
This is going to hurt so
just,
much.
No, not necessarily. Now just listen to it and we'll take some notes on this. All right, Rich.
It's time for us to put ourselves on the line this year with our tech predictions programs. And Gary was kidding around a little bit before we started. He says, why do we bother doing these things? We're never right anyway.
I'm glad we didn't look at the last one to an analysis of how great we were.
Those records have been destroyed, I believe. As part of our policy here, we wipe them out before we get to the new year. Well, this time we've got a recording of it, so I guess we'll all be held accountable to it.
Obviously, we're going to see another iPhone, another version of the iPad, and I think we're going to see a number of other tablets. I'm a little concerned that we won't have the demand for all the tablets we're going to see. I think that certainly one of the areas that everybody, I think, can predict is the tablet computer will gain in popularity. Yeah. 3D, I think, is also going to be interesting, not only on your television, but on those tablets and iPhones.
After all, we're using the disclaimer. None of the things that we're saying make any sense at all. I seriously believe that there's a possibility that Apple might want to acquire Verizon, or at least a controlling interest in it.
Really?
That way they'd be able to, why not? They'd be able to control the entire process for the customer experience from one end to the other. They currently now have the device on one end. They currently have the apps in the iTunes store on the other end. If you had the medium to transmit it back and forth in between, and you could also bundle in pricing for using that particular network, that'd be like complete control for Steve Jobs. Here's my second prediction for 2011, and that is there'll be no tablet maker that will even come close to catching up to Apple in this year. I think they're still going to run the front. They're going to still be the front runner when it comes to that medium for this year.
And I would agree because they have the iTunes store. And once they have that infrastructure in place, and Apple's going to be coming in with streaming TV probably this year, and deliver it wirelessly to the iPad.
You know, you're seeing the screenagers today, right? That game consoles and everything mobile, and now we're talking about e-books as well. I see my kids, and they're just spending more and more time in front of a screen. So I think the whole concept of screenagers is going to be a something we'll debate heavily in the popular press in the coming months.
Well, right now it seems like the geeks are the technical and maybe even the younger crowds. I'm talking the 20-ish people, 20 to 30 year olds. They're getting devices, you know, like the Apple TVs, and there's a few other Boxy, I think, is one, and these internet ready devices that deliver video to your and TV to your home. Mm-hmm. But it's going to hit mainstream this year. With the, you know, Apple TVs, like I said, it's coming up. I know people that have canceled their cable services and use just Hulu and Netflix to watch everything.
Well, guys, so what do you think? What do you think quickly?
Was pretty good. You didn't predict that, did you?
No, I didn't. Well, that was the Mayan. That was the Mayan part of the predictions. That everything would suddenly end.
Well, you know, Gary was right on. He had a lot of those. And I'm really surprised that the 3D tablets haven't taken off. Nintendo came out with a game system a couple years ago that offered 3D gaming system on their Nintendo DS 3D, I think it was. Mm. And but I think they had to pull that, or it was causing eye strain on kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if he actually heard that.
Yeah, but I think Gary took the softball. Come on.
Yeah, I think tablets are going to be big next year.
And you, of course, went for the big one.
Well, you know, you got to shoot the, you know, if you're going to go to the casino, you shoot the wad. You know what I'm talking about?
Can you tell why this man is still working hard for his living?
Hey, listen, Microsoft came, it went, I lost. Oh. Apple came, it went, I lost. I mean, what the heck, you know? But really, the tablet thing, he was right about, and it was going to grow. I didn't agree with him on the 3D part, because I don't think 3D is going to make it all that big until they can do it without glasses.
Well, you know, they can, and that's why I thought they would come out with the tablet, because if you hold a device, they have 3D. If you hold it at a fixed distance at a particular angle, you can get 3D. You know, without wearing special glasses. They have that now. They have them in TVs, but you got to be directly perpendicular.
Standing at a 90-degree angle,
yeah,
in a full
perpendicular,
gale.
Yes.
We had that back in the 70s when I was a kid, too. It's called the viewfinder.
Yeah.
All right, when we come back, we're going to take a continued ton of talk about this, what the year should have looked like and what it really did look like. Well, I thought we'd do this hour of the program looking back at 2012, and since we have this distinguished, or extinguished as the case may be, panel of experts in studio here, we just kind of have a free-for-all, open this up to you guys to comment on. Rich, I didn't know, do you have any reflections on some of the things that we were predicting or you heard being predicted for this year that you thought would or wouldn't come?
Yeah, I certainly liked Cal's prediction, because it does make sense for one of these, you know, firms, one of the big guys we've been talking about in this show, you know, the Amazons of the world, to do that roll up and get the phone carrier as well. Because the carriers are turning into just these billing centers for the Googles and Apples of the world.
Isn't that interesting? The whole nature of, I think maybe one of the turning points I think I saw this year was the switch in the dominance of the carriers. They used to call the shots a lot. And I think it's changing.
They're commoditized almost.
Pardon me?
They're commoditized, and they don't bring out better, you know, services. They can't, really can't compete with each other.
And people are now talking more and more about buy your phone outright.
Yeah.
Buy your phone outright, and then, you know, it being better economics for you. That really cuts into the deal.
Well, $600? I mean, you pay $600 for a smartphone?
Way back when the Trio first came out.
Yeah, that was $600.
I ponied, at that time I was working a full-time job and I could do it. I ponied up that much money, but then I could carry that through. It was my device at that point on, you know, and I wasn't paying incrementally to the company, and probably, I don't know what the figures are, but you pay a fortune, I think, if you pay on the plan.
Well, yeah. I think because the technology changed where basically, you can buy a phone, you know, in the middle of Wichita, Kansas, and as long as you can get a cell signal, you can activate it yourself. Where before, the phones were basically bought by the companies, the carriers.
Yes.
They said, okay, we'll take care of all that work for you. We'll get you up and going, or the technology wasn't there. And they controlled the stream. The people who manufactured the phones never even wanted to be on the forefront. Now you've got people like Apple and Google, and they go like, hey, we're going to be running our own stores. We're going to be selling our own product. We're going
to
sell
Windows
our own
getting
phones.
Windows is getting into that now. Well, they used to be the software giant was how we referred to Microsoft, and that's a whole new different game now as they're producing devices. And somebody even said to me, well, they may buy Nokia.
Well, yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah, as a way of and rather than build their own phone.
I stopped talking about computer companies buying phone companies. It's not a good thing.
But look at Google's got a fiber, you know, operation now.
Yes, in Kansas.
According to Eric Schmidt, they're serious about it, and they really want to deliver fiber to whatever, you know.
And so that'll become a very that seems to be the big thing, that we have devices nowadays that are capable of almost doing more than the system can deliver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, and we're being forced to pay an extraordinary premium for that, too.
Yeah.
But what I've noticed, at least more than anything else, is that people who – it used to be folks would create devices and that other folks would take those devices and they create a business stream from them. And it would generally be something of a consumable nature. Now the people who are creating the devices are saying, hey, look, not only can we sell a device, but if we can get it tied into some sort of a continually
revenue stream, it's even better. So they create the iPhone. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. If we put apps on it, we got a continuing revenue stream with it. You know, you got your Windows phone. Well, the Windows, they're going to put their app store. Everybody wants a store to go with it.
Stores,
so that they have,
you know,
something to
Shane,
stream it.
Stores was the word that came into my mind, yeah, as I was listening to our predictions. Talking, I think, Ed, you mentioned the iTunes store, you know, or the Apple store. Google now has its, what's it called? Google
Play.
Google Play. And you've got Amazon, which is, you know, huge.
And the reason for having stores, if you notice, everybody wants everyone to stay on my side of the block.
Yeah.
Oh, you
yeah.
bought a Windows phone. Come on over here. You should be buying from
phone. Guys, what are we going to do about that? I mean, it looks like more and more, higher and higher walls are being built around these different systems. Whether it's Android with Google, they're cutting off, for instance, the sync ability with Windows now. And you got Windows with its Windows Store and all its devices. And you got Apple, of course, with a wonderful ecosystem of its store and lots of devices. So
the lines in the sand are being drawn.
Yeah.
You know, it's time, because the technology is where it's at. It's time to or get off the pot. Right,
but what's the wise move for the consumer?
Well,
then?
Here, in essence,
we have to buy somebody's system.
No, but well, here's the deal, though, Foster, and I've said this before, and Gary will argue this with me, and I don't care.
He's not here arguing,
but it's absolutely true. When you control your ecosystem, when you control your product and the services that go with it, you get a better product. Mm-hmm. It's stable. The Apple operating system stays stable because they control the whole game. Yeah. Windows is starting to see that. Yep. They're going to do the same thing.
True. They don't want the contaminant. You know, they want that pure.
But Windows has been
control.
Famous for being, yeah, you know, you got it everywhere. You got to use it. Like, for instance, even with Apple, they're talking about getting Office to the, you know, to the iPad as being a big thing.
Which worked really fine for Windows and Microsoft when they were the only game in town. Mm. But now you got all these other people around, and they're going like, well, we can do our own thing here. We can go there. And so now they've got to start pulling their own camp together.
So I come
as
back
well.
To it, guys. So what do we do? I mean, as consumers, what do we
you
do?
You pick a spot in the sand, put a stake in it. And go.
I mean, I'm already seeing it, especially with browsers. You know, certain websites now won't work with Google browser. Microsoft, a lot of Microsoft sites. You need.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I've not seen that.
I've run into a lot of sites, or some Microsoft sites won't work with Google browser, and vice versa. I mean, they're starting to. Hey, you're going to.
So Google is starting to harden. It used to be that. That used to be the one that was kind of the universal one. You could catch it for almost anywhere.
Yeah, I think it's Microsoft that's doing it. Starting. I mean, it's. Yeah,
they're responding by building the walls a little higher around their own
thing.
Oh,
my God.
Hey, what are your thoughts on
that? Pharaoh is hardening his heart.
Pardon me? Pharaoh is hardening his heart. Here come the plagues. Look out for that. So what are your thoughts, Ed? I mean, you deal with, you know, executives that have all these different platforms.
Yeah, but they have a lot more money and stuff to be able to. So every 3 months, they go, oh, just give me another one. You know, really?
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that just do that. They see someone walk in the room. They have a new device. And they go, oh, I got to have that. So there's a lot of people that's eye candy. And it's just not executives. It's kids, too. They do the same thing. I want that. We have a guy at work that every time a new iPhone comes out or a new other product, he has to go out and get it. He saves up all his pennies, nickels, and bottle returns so he can take a day off work and buy his new iPhone because he has to do it. It is a compulsion.
Did you hear, by the way, I just saw it, an iWatch. They're talking about an iWatch coming out in 2013.
But why would you need one?
Oh, who cares? Need doesn't enter into this. As Ed said, need doesn't enter into this.
They want to be on the curve. They want to be.
The Apple thing would drive me nuts.
Yeah.
The new, you know, all these versions, you know, Mountain Lion, everything. I'm talking coming up with this, you know, Gen 4, Gen 5, Gen. It would drive me nuts.
Oh, my friend.
But it's worked.
Windows
made
8
a fortune.
Is just the beginning of your journey,
no,
my friend.
No, I'm going to have Windows 8 for a long time. I'm not going to. Or you know what Microsoft will do? It'll upgrade and not have to tell me about it.
Right.
You know, just like Windows does. There's going to be a new version. I don't have to pay for it, or they're not going to tell me about it.
All right, guys, quickly. What do you see as some of the key turning points in technology during this last year, 2012? Key turning points.
I think touches came a big, big way. Touch. Not just with Microsoft.
Yep, yep.
Everything.
Okay, touch is a huge thing. We mentioned stores before.
Stores and apps are always going to be
which
big.
Which Sony started. Sony started that with the PS2, their store.
Oh,
they did.
Okay.
They really did.
That's funny. I don't think of them as a
Sony
player.
Store was really what kind of got everyone, because you had a Sony product that you had to use a Sony store for everything. So. Everyone kind of followed along with them.
The death of TV.
The death of TV.
Yeah, so
not the cable.
Streaming. Yeah, streaming.
TV as we know it.
TV as we know it. So yes. You still need monitors, but yeah. You're streaming content at your selection, at your time.
You just described my Christmas present was an Apple TV to exactly. myself. And I have just been having a ball finding all the ways to get content without having a subscription to a cable provider.
Yeah, right. but you
except
know,
for the except for the cable, for the pipe itself.
Right.
Well, you know, but you know, there's going to be more constrictions on that. Remember, Netflix used to carry Showtime, Cinemax, and HBO. I believe most of those have pulled their programming.
Oh yes, of course.
Off but just got Disney back.
They just got Disney back?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
All the Disney cartoons are right now available on Netflix. You don't have to wait for their
second. Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, that's right. I heard that's right. Yeah, that's right.
So, so a lot of people, ABC, NBC, CBS, the traditional ones, may not publish their material on there because they don't get their commercial
revenue.
Here's
the cool thing. I found all of our favorite CBS series. I can stream them all. Boom. Done.
Right from their website.
I went to ABC. ABC's got that. I got to check some other things out, like Fox Sports and things like that.
Excellent.
But if you now, go ahead. We'll continue to talk about this. So the death of TV is one of those things we'll continue to talk more about. Hey, we're looking back at 2012. It's the Internet Advisor. Stick around. Hi, this is Foster Brown, the co-host of the program. Gary actually is off until second program of the new year. And he'll be back. He's in, I think he's in Florida right now with his son, with lacrosse tryouts, having a ball there. Ed Rudell, Shane Hamlin, Rich Steenan is with us in studio, along with Mr. Cal Carson as well. We're talking about 2012, and besides being a massive fail for the Mayan calendar, thankfully, but we're talking about what have been some of the big turning points, some key things that happened in 2012 that will really have repercussions throughout the rest, you know, in the coming year. Eddie, what do you think? Anything in particular sticks out for you?
Well, we had a Boy Scout meeting, of all things, a technology week. And then, of course, I showed them how I made a tube amp, you know, and that's like, you know, it's no big deal. It's an old tube amp. But one of the other guys, he belongs to Make It. He does a lot of Make It kits.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he did the 3D printer kit that they did. For, you know, the printer costs maybe $700 with the add-ons and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you can go buy 3D printers now for under, I believe it's like $500, if not less.
So it's come out of the labs and now is coming into. Just explain a 3D printer for people.
Well, think of how a printhead goes back and forth on the tray, right, depositing ink. Imagining if it deposited a microscopic piece of plastic, a single color, and then built it up.
In three dimensions.
Wow. And that's how this thing
works.
You
know what? I'm a naysayer about 3D printing because a lot of the futurists say this is changing and it's the biggest thing ever. But I've been using 3D printing from my engineering days in 1994. I mean, I used to make prototype parts in automotive. And yeah, the machines cost $1 million at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But we could do that. And I just don't see you doing
that
in a home.
I think it's for geeks.
Geeks.
And what they do is they go to the stores.
Geeks have never driven an economy.
Well, but, yeah, but usually 10 years after the geeks come up with it, then it becomes mainstream.
Ed, can you imagine? I mean, if back in our day when we were younger, the Pinewood Derbies with if they were, you know, the
oh my gosh, right? Oh my gosh,
wouldn't that be great?
You could think of the colored fins you could put on the car.
Oh my! You could do some, you know, it wouldn't just be graphite anymore. It'd be all kinds of cool stuff you can do to win.
Cal, how about you? What have been from your perspective some of the key things or a turning point?
Well, I think one of the things that I did notice that is starting to become a trend is the devices themselves, especially the portable devices, are getting thinner and thinner and thinner. And it started with the MacBook Air, and that was been out for about a year or so. But I've also noticed in the Windows arena, they're starting to get their notebooks thinner and thinner as well. And people just want things small, which is weird.
And they're lighter. I think lighter as well as small.
What's really weird is they want their laptops thinner and smaller and their phones bigger, which is just
well,
totally
Mike Amon last hour talked about that. You have this crazy thing where phones are getting bigger and moving towards tablets, and on the other side you got laptops, for instance, they're getting smaller. The surface is what?
Surface is thin, yeah.
It's, 10 inches? It's, is it 10 inches
yeah,
screen
it's
on
teeny.
It? It's 10 inches screen
but,
on it?
But the thing that I'm really happy to see is the netbook dying and going away. Because
it was underpowered.
No one ever talks about them anymore. Mm-hmm. You don't even see them sold anymore.
But it's almost like tablets have become the netbooks.
Exactly. They really
have. And there are a lot of them that are underpowered. So you got to be careful what you purchase.
I think that's true.
What you guys are all talking about, one of the things, kind of a turning point for me, is mobile. If you look in terms of sales, in terms of what's selling, mobile devices are outselling what we would have called the PC market. And I guess I thought that the death of PC was hype. until they begin to see the numbers. And really, PCs in terms of the desktop, you know, the big old clunky thing you bark your shins on under the table all the time.
And that kind of goes in back to my kind of expertise, you know, gaming.
Right.
Gaming is the big industry, bigger than the movie industry, guys. And mm-hmm. PC gaming is, there's nothing there yet for PC games. Like, I can't log on. You've got to have the big, you know, that night.
You're starting to see laptop gaming stations.
We've had laptop gaming stations, but they're never the same.
Yeah, but you know, it's getting even better, though, if you kind of look in the sense of the newer desktops. And you look at them not in the conventional sense of the box on the floor and the monitor on the top.
Yeah.
They're all in one desktops now. They're thinner. They're lighter. The monitors themselves swivel a lot, mm-hmm. and they're starting to incorporate some of them with touch technology, which is going to make gaming a different dimension, I think, once they get that instituted on there.
I personally, keyboard, mouse, they're very... That's them. That's what they want to stay with.
Au contraire, my friend. Windows 8, come on into the new century. We can't go back to the start button, right?
No. I'm not saying that that's me. I'm saying I'm looking forward to something new for the gaming industry.
Right,
looking for that big break.
Well, you know, Nintendo Wii was.
Nintendo Wii
is, and Microsoft came out with that 2D camera.
The Kinect.
And I was really hoping they would interface that with, like, Halo and stuff like that. So instead of using keyboard and mouse and stuff like that, I can use the Kinect, and it would be able to use my gestures and body language to be able to play the game. And I could work out at the same time as, you know, blowing away an alien.
I think they waited because the Windows 8 phone is completely... I get content for Xbox games on here that I don't normally get while I'm playing the Xbox. This is integrated with Xbox.
So the integration of those things together.
Oh, heck, I think they should have took the Kinect feature and just took it one step further and incorporated it into the desktop computer so I can walk into the room and wave at it and say, turn on, turn off, go to the internet, come back.
You know, I see that with TVs.
Which I don't see them doing.
My daughter and son-in-law have, I think it's a Sony, that has a camera on it, and you can actually, with gestures, I don't know if it's through Xbox, but you can make... Now, it was clumsy. It was not working when he said, look how this... And it didn't work. But I think that that will be refined so that you'll have much more of that gesture interface.
Yeah, I mean...
Even along with touch.
I think Mary Meeker supports that. That's what she's predicting for
the
coming year.
It's got to be something. Because
what was that, Rich?
That Mary Meeker is predicting that gestures will be the big thing.
So gestures, as well as touch, gestures now are going to become a big part of it. That is fascinating to hear. See what you guys think about this. We've kind of gone back and forth, and Windows 8 has got, especially I think this year, maybe furious to see, and I use, by the way, I'm an Apple user. I work on a Mac platform. You convinced me 3 years ago, Cal, and I don't want to go back from that. But,
I didn't convince you. You convinced yourself.
That's true. I'm just gadget hungry. In any case, I, however, really like the Windows interface, what they're calling the MUI, the modern user interface, from GUI now to MUI, modern user interface. But that tile look, and why I like it, because not only is touch important, but it brings in the theme of simplicity. And I think the tech writers this year missed completely the genius of this new interface because of its simplicity. So my wife now doesn't want to see 10 things when she approaches a computer. She wants a screen with a very few things she can go touch, boom, or with a mouse, boom, and she's into her email, she's into whatever.
I'm sorry, I'm putting my hands up. No, the tech writers did not miss that interface. I tell you what they missed. They missed the opportunity for Microsoft to give them a chance to look at that interface and really enjoy what it is.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
For some reason or another, it seems like the devices aren't, quote, surfacing. Oh. So therefore, I think... You know, if they get the devices out there in the hands of the tech writers so they can show what the game is all about and we can either crow or not crow about it, then yes, it would grow. It would take off and it would probably really fly.
But the ones who got it were talking about, well, it's not like my Windows interface and I just don't stay, I stay away
from
you gotta
look at
tiles and I go back
like
to the desktop. You know, well, for pity's sake, of course you do. But again, I think that the consumers that are coming on now that are getting the touchscreens don't want a whole lot of information. What do they use it for? Email? They use it maybe for some photos, maybe to write a letter every now and then.
Yep. You know,
for websites.
And the, hey, look at this.
Very simple.
Yeah.
And the, hey, you know.
And
the,
hey, look at me. Yeah.
Yeah, but think about this, Foster. Jobs had that back about in the 90s when they came out with the iMac. It was basically an appliance. Mm-hmm. You took it out of the box.
Yes.
You plugged it in. It set itself up. And it was for you to what? Do what? Email, surf the net. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. It was an appliance.
I think
that's
we're
what
coming
a lot of people want appliances.
Well, we've talked in here about thinner, lighter, more accessible in terms of touch. I don't have to know as much as you guys do in the studio, or you know, how to climb around that tree
it,
on the inside, or how to fix it, etc. I think it'll be a boon for the tech people who are working with this, because people don't want to know how to repair the behind the scenes, which would be a great boost for you guys in terms of doing tech, especially for our families during the holidays.
Well, the lazy factor among a computer user is the most profitable one I have found.
Good.
Well, you know, but I'm in my age now, and I feel I just need to get a bigger magnifying glass.
Well,
these things are so small and compact, and you don't really have screws and nuts and bolts to take these things apart anymore. You have snaps and pressure points.
You're explaining why I like my iPhone 4 for all the apps on it, brilliant apps, and the way that it can interact with my Echo Sphere. For instance, I can take that and use it as a remote with my Apple TV, but I don't like it as a phone, as a little pocket device I carry, because it's too small a screen. And having used this Windows phone, the Nokia 900, with a 4.3-inch screen, this now, I need to have this bigger because of my eyes.
Right.
And also because I think with the tiles on it, it's easier to interact with because it's bigger. So I think that is going to have a real impact in terms of ease of use, light, and gestures. And what are you grinning at?
You got somewhere in your house right now, in a closet, is one of those big button phones, isn't it?
No, I think it may then have gone to Salvation Army a while back. Hey, we'll take a break. When we come back, there's one group we haven't talked about quite yet, and that's Google. And I want to ask what some of your thoughts are on some of the significant things that have happened with Google, where you think they're going, and maybe are they the new evil empire? We'll talk about that as we continue with the Internet Advisor. Thank you for being with us here for our second hour of the Internet Advisor. By the way, coming up, for those of you listening to our flagship station, WJR, we are going to have an hour of answering your questions at 800-859-0957. Want to write that down? 800-859-0957 or 800-859-0WJR. Starting after the news at the top of the hour, we'll open up our phone lines, and please do give us a call. Maybe you got something for Christmas that you'd like to figure out how to make it work. Again, in our studio, we had Ed Rudell, Shane Hamlin. Rich Dean is with us. Thank you very much for joining us. And also Kel Carson. One of the things that I wanted to look at, we've been talking about turning points in 2012. Ed has an interesting list in terms of things that didn't go so well in 2012.
Yeah, you know, I was browsing CNN this morning, and I happened to catch this, and it was basically 2012 tech fails. And that's interesting. And the first one on the list, of course, was Apple Maps.
Oh,
and I think Apple Maps got it. They were really harsh on Apple Maps. Just because you turned into the San Francisco Bay in the wrong area,
or in Australia, that you ended up in the middle of
the same thing happened with the GPS units too. I mean, and they took years for them to do that. Even OnStar, the lady I carpool with every day, that's her job. 8 hours a day is that she corrects OnStar points of interest errors.
Very good.
And then she reports those to the company that OnStar gets all their map information on. Right. So they have a real-time correction that's going on
constantly,
back and forth.
Yeah.
And for Apple to go out there and throw a map out there, and then people going, well, you got these coordinates wrong. Well, of course they did. I mean, it's
the
not perfect.
The concerns that I heard is that
there's so much
they tried to reinvent the wheel in some ways, because you've got companies like Google, or as you said, OnStar, who have a legacy, and they have thousands of people working at this, building it. And they just didn't get the right set of data and people behind them.
Right. So anyways, that was a fail.
Precisely because Google Maps, their app, came back to iOS.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the last nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
I think really the last nail in the coffin.
Well, the Facebook IPO was also mentioned on there because it opened at 38. Because remember, when that came out, they were going, why did it open so high? Because there was several other IPOs that opened up earlier in the year, and they open up at $18 and they shoot up to 60. And if you're the first ones in there, you make a gazillion dollars. So with Facebook, they opened up at approximately a good value, $38. Dropped down to 18 in its lowest. Now it's at 28 approximately.
Is that
really a fail?
No.
Well, they really haven't found their niche.
Yeah.
You know, are they a money maker? They're still making lots of money, but the stock market doesn't think that way.
As an analyst, you've watched markets. What do you think of the performance so far of Facebook?
Oh, dismal, dismal. And I think it's because, you know, you can't clearly look at them and figure out how they're going to make money. Because markets, the Wall Street guys want to see how they're making money and then project into the future. And then they buy their stock based on what it'll be, you know, 5 years from now.
Right.
And they just don't have that yet.
Just quickly, along those lines, do you think they've been fair to Apple? Because Apple's been taking a shellacking in some ways. Because it's, well, you got nothing new coming. You're showing us all you can show us.
Yeah, I don't think they're being fair to Apple, even though Apple is extremely highly priced already.
Not the 700 it was at its height, wasn't it, Cal? Something over 700.
But, yeah, they're hitting them because they're waiting to see that leadership coming from the new CEO. Mm. That, you know, they don't have Steve Jobs, so how in the world could they repeat this?
So that's kind of a question mark that's hanging from 2012 into 2013.
Yeah, right.
And what are some of the other, quickly?
Google Nexus Q. It was a TV, you know, just like the Apple TV.
Never did a product die so fast.
Remember last year, Groupon was on everyone's
lips? Yes, yes.
You know, and what happened is that people thought this was really cool, but the businesses got tired of being, you know, these waves of businesses coming in and then losing it. And
wasn't sticky enough.
And the consumers on the other end were tired of receiving all that email.
Oh, yeah. Lord, yes.
And then you also had Zynga. Which Zynga
who bought Zynga? Who bought Zynga?
Well, was Zynga is a company that just makes all these different applications.
Farmville.
Yeah, Farmville is one of them, right. And they paid something like $183 million for Draw Something. It's a mobile application.
Oh, that one that was so big for such a short while.
Right, and they really overspent on that, and their stock performance has been dismal because they really haven't been able to make that.
And they've
back.
Lost all their management. They've all fled.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
So, you know, those are just some of the big fails from this year.
Okay. I noticed that Google, this brings me around. What do you guys think is going to be happening with Google? I mean, it's led the search for so long, but now seems to be on the verge of, with, for instance, it's shutting down the syncing with Microsoft, seems to be on the verge of becoming this Death Star again.
Oh, no. What? So, yes, there's always privacy concerns, and I don't trust Google as far as I can throw them, right? They're getting into your email. They always know where you are and what you're doing. So there's a problem there. But this, to me, I'm very excited by the fact that they acquired or they hired Kurzweil, you know, the, like, futurist.
Or Kurzweil, that's right, yes.
Yeah. And that, you know, this guy had it made
He's
already.
An inventor, right?
He's an inventor, futurist, you know.
That's right, that's right.
Singularity Institute.
Singularity founder. Is, that's right, his whole thing of everything coming together.
Okay. Yeah, so here you got this big thinker who obviously is doing all right financially, accepting, you know, a salary job at Google.
Yeah. You know, that is interesting.
You got to think that Google said, whatever you want, we're going to do, kind of thing. And
well, they certainly commanded, even with the success of Apple and its iPads, et cetera. If I'm not wrong, Cal, isn't it internationally, Android still leads in terms of the number of units that are out there being sold? And, of course, there's many flavors of it.
Yeah, that is quite true. But, you know, I want to talk back again about this whole Google thing. And he was saying about they read their, you know, your email and stuff like that. You know something? And then the folks got all bent out of shape because the folks were talking about, well, you know, hey, you're going to put your pictures on Instagram. We're going to be able to use them and stuff like that. My God. You expect me to, you know, come on, put all your junk on my server, and I'm going to maintain all this stuff for free and just go with that. You know, that's crap. You get what you pay for. If you dump your stuff out there, then you're susceptible to that
Viva
that type
el capitalismo.
For free. No, you're right.
Yeah, for
free, right.
Yeah, I mean,
we have been feasting at a free lunch table for a long time with the internet.
Well, you know, I have to think, Google's been selling the search. You know, what are people searching on? What are the trends? And that's where they started making all their money when they first started, you know, started out 10 years ago.
I think Google might be in trouble with that, though. It's going to be one of my predictions next week, right?
Okay, we'll see then next week.
I'll tell you this. Google does not have any focus, in my opinion. Mm. They're all over the place. They're trying to do 100 different things, and none of them are doing really well. They got the Google laptop. You know anybody owns one? I don't know anybody owns one.
Well, they have
one.
Their own island now, don't they?
Yeah.
Because they have the farm out on off of the coast of California.
Yeah, the server farm, yes.
Yeah, because they cool it with the water, so they have their own islands out there.
But, I mean, they have no focus.
Yeah, and I think that...
They're all over.
Yeah, they are all over. And Google Glasses, I'm wondering. Well, but you know something? We have been talking about new ways of interacting with our computers, and I don't doubt that the Google Glasses concept, the notion of my being able to wear something that I can right. look up and see information. Who knows what? The Apple iWatch is rumored to come out. This is a rumor right now. But again, that there are going to be ways of consuming information that are going to be new, and that might be one of them.
But I think the whole idea that everyone is trending toward, Apple and I believe Google as well, is the voice interface. You talk your Siri, you talk yes. the Google interface.
Yes.
I'm sure Microsoft sooner or later will come up with something that will work with it as well. I think that is the direction that we want to go in the future, and with all... If things keep going the way they are, and if they can get it right, the first person out the gate who can get a voice interactive interface to work is going to be leading in the future.
I thought that Android has done it for people who have used Android phones. You did.
They have it. So does Windows. They all have something.
Yeah.
But I know what you're talking about, Cal. You're talking about a real where you're not like, please call home. You know, I want a real voice.
Natural
activated.
Voice.
Yes, directly. Where I can talk just like I'm talking to everyone here, and it works.
We got a program coming up in January. We're going to be talking with some blind people who depend heavily on that vocal interaction. I'll be talking about that. I think it'll be very interesting with them. Hey, folks, thank you so much. We're going to take a pause, and then after the break, we're going to come back with our phone lines open, ready to take your calls at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. And thanks, Rich Steenan, for being with us in here. Ed Riddell, Shane Hamlin, Cal Carson, and myself, Foster Brown. We'll be back to answer your questions, help you to get some of those new toys working for you as you continue listening to the Internet Advisor. By the way, thank you to Annie Nichols and to Rich Mosinski, who make this work behind the glass as well. And thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor.
Whether you're listening to us on one of our affiliates through Michigan Talk Radio or through our podcast, contact us by email if you have a question through our homepage at InternetAdvisor.net. Or put your question into one of our forums. Now let's rejoin the Internet Advisor team for the second hour of our podcast.
That's right. We're here for your calls right now. And to get in touch, it's a magic number, 800-859-0957. On our dime. That gets you in touch with a whole panel of experts in here to help you out with your computers, answer some questions about a device you may be thinking of getting, or one that may have been under your tree or in your stocking. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. We're waiting for your call, and we'll get right back to answer it. Thank you for joining us for our very special call-in segment of the program. If you're just visiting us for the first time, we at the Internet Advisor have been here now going on 15 years. We're finishing our 15th year. Gary Baker and I have been doing this on WJR, 760 AM in Detroit, and delighted to continue to be here. Very privileged, and also part of the Michigan Radio Network on five different communities throughout our state of Michigan. But right now, the phone lines are open, toll-free, for you to call us. If you're listening to us on the Internet, last week we had a gentleman who was listening to us in Virginia who gave us a call. And if you're listening on the Internet and have a question about your computer or about other devices, please give us a call, toll-free at 800-859-0957. Let me introduce our panel of experts who are in studio here. Ed Riddell, thank you so much for being with us.
This is my favorite part of the show.
I know it is. You love answering these questions. Also with us, Shane Hamlin. Shane, good to have you here, too.
Thank you so much.
Shane, we just should say, by the way, Shane, yes. to tell a little bit about, Shane has been has helped us for quite a few years yep. now, but Shane, right now you have your own little shop that you're working in?
Comptech Services.
In suburban Heights. Detroit, Michigan, in Sterling Heights. Yep. So you have had, you're behind the counter helping people and answering questions?
I am always helping people, whether it be on the phone or walking in the store. Lots of Windows 8 questions, and we sell a lot of Windows 8 products, so we kind of cover everything there.
Good. So we're going to be covering a lot of bases here, and then, of course, our own Cal Carson, who is here, a man who speaks many tongues in terms of operating systems.
My God, this is my favorite part of the program because it's Ed's favorite part of the program because I like watching Ed have a good time.
And if you have a question about anything that has to do with Mac or Apple computers or devices, Cal is certainly our expert there. All right, guys, we have got everybody's lined up ready with questions. It must have been a good Christmas for computers and devices. Let's go to Alan in Sterling Heights, and welcome to the Internet Advisor Holiday Edition. How you doing?
All right, how you guys doing?
Very
Merry
well.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Thank you so much, Alan. What can we do for you?
Well, I heard you guys talking earlier about death of possibly TV, and I would like to be one of the guys that puts a nail in that coffin. God, I'm sick and tired of paying all these high cable prices.
Oh, yeah.
And I know a couple of my friends have these things called Roku.
Yeah.
I wonder what your take is on that stuff, and if there's anything else other than that out there, just like Roku.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll let the other guys chime in first. I just bought an Apple TV, which is one of those devices, so I can talk about that in a minute. But guys, you only want 2 minutes on it?
Well, you know, I was just looking on our Internet Advisor website, and we had a Cutting the Cord episode on May 25th.
Yes, that's right.
With Rick Broida, and he listed a number of different possible. You can listen to that stream, but I haven't cut the cord, and I really don't have that much knowledge of it, except for that we had a May 25th, 2012 show about that, where Rick talked about the Roku and the Apple TV and several other options.
No. I think it'll be great. I mean, I can't wait to get rid of my cable company. I mean, really.
Have you got any experience with the Roku?
You know what? I don't. But I know it kind of gathers all the internet-based stations, you know.
And it's independent of anyone like Google or Apple or anyone like that. And so you can get Netflix on there? Right.
You get Netflix,
Sci-Fi.
Hulu. What do you get, Cal? You know what the
You're going down the right path. But here's the caveat with cutting the cable cord and using something like that. Either an Apple TV or a Roku box, and that is all the content that you get off of cable is not necessarily available on those boxes.
Right, exactly. Right.
So, for example, if you're a bozo like me who really enjoys Home Garden TV,
HGTV,
you're not going to get that on either one of those boxes. So there's no way, unless if you really need that or want that, or have people in your house that say, you know, your wife says, okay, fine, cut the cable, but I'm still going to get my stuff, and you're going to go like, no. Then, you know, she's going to have a problem with that. In that case, you're going to have issues with that. So,
he's describing, by the way, what's going on at my house right now.
Exactly.
Because yesterday I installed our Apple TV, which is like a hockey puck. But essentially what happens is you plug your internet connection to it, or this connects Wi-Fi, and then there's an HDMI cable that goes to my TV. And by the way, you have to have one of these later model TVs, which plays the HDTV, essentially. It plays the high-definition TV. And then what happens is whatever box you buy, one of these little devices, essentially all they are is like a gateway from the internet to these different services. So depending on which one you're – I'm looking at, for instance, Roku has Netflix, Disney, Amazon Instant Video, Hulu Plus, Vudu, HBO Go. They have a lot.
Yeah, but you're not going to get local stations. That are broadcast.
Nope. Well, you pick those up with your rabbit ears.
You have to pick those up with your HD rabbit ears, right?
Right. Exactly. So what Cal said, I think, is very important for you, Al. Look around. Look around online. Rick Broida, who is our cheapskate, is normally here with us once a month. And Rick recommended the Roku HD for $50, because it has great connectivity to it. It's got lots of services that it connects to. One other caveat for you is, besides Cal saying, look around and make sure you, as Eddie said, you can get the content that you want or that your wife wants, in my case. But also know that some of these services, whether it's Netflix or Hulu Plus or whatever, they're going to cost you money. Okay? Like, for instance, with Netflix, you pay $8 a month. Now, when you put that all together with the cost of getting cable to your house, start doing that economics too. Okay?
Right.
Because it can amount to a fair amount.
What was the product that we talked about? Was it a Fiji or a...
Oh, the stick. Guys, what was it? I wasn't here for that program. Cal, remember that one that plugs into the back of the TV?
Yeah, we'll have to look it up and I get it.
It's a local company here in Michigan.
Smart stick. Wasn't it smart?
It's a smart stick, and I cannot... It's like a Fiji or something like that. And they're a Michigan-based company, and it's an amazing little device. That's about the size of a flash drive, but it also has an SD card slot in there so that you can record programs on there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's by Favi, F-A-V-I, Favi Entertainment. They're in Sterling Heights, Michigan. $50 for the 4 gigabyte, 8 gigabytes, $80. You can store content on them as well. So that's the difference that's involved in that, Alan. But thanks. We've gotten a chance to get a lot of people some information. By the way, if you go back in our podcasts, you can look for that smart stick. Just Google for that or search for that on our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and you'll find a show where they talk with the people who own that. Back in just a second to make more of your calls at 800-859-0WJR. Thank you very much for joining us for this last broadcast of 2012. And we're delighted to be able to do that, connecting with a whole bunch of you out there. And by the way, if the phone lines are busy, hang on, we'll get a call done and get right back to talking with you. Brad from Brighton, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. Thank you very much.
I've got a problem with I'm having a problem with Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
I bought two upgrades and installed them on a desktop and also my laptop. And in both cases, the numbers at the top of the keyboard don't work. Now, my laptop, of course, is a smaller unit, so it doesn't have a number pad,
right?
Per se. Mm-hmm. But the number pad on the desktop works just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Any idea?
But when you say the numbers at the top, you're talking about the function keys? Am I thinking?
Yeah,
thing?
Yeah. The number keys that go across there.
Oh, the number keys that go across. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Here's a best way to find out what's going on with that. If you go into safe mode,
With Windows 8, can you do that with Windows 8?
Yeah,
sure.
Okay.
Yeah, boot into
I hope so.
And, yeah. Well, there's a different, I tried it, and it's a little different,
it's a little bit, but you can get into a diagnostic mode with Windows 8.
Diagnostic mode, I think it was called.
And if it works then you know it's probably software related of some sort, a driver, something right. like that. Didn't, because keyboards, obviously, laptops have, touchpad keyboard drivers.
Right.
I would probably check something in like that. But it is, if you're running the upgrade, there is some known issues with the keypads or the key number keys.
Now, this is on a laptop, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, a laptop. Yeah. And also, didn't you say on the desktop as well, too?
Yeah, on both of the computers I upgraded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's happened on both of them.
Okay.
That's interesting.
What brand are they? I'm sorry, pardon me. What brand are they? Are they the same brand?
No, the desktop is a Sony Vaio.
Okay.
I think it's a VPCL 111.
Okay, it's a Sony, and what's a laptop?
An Asus.
Asus, okay.
Who's your provider?
Your internet provider?
Yeah.
Comcast.
Did you load Constant Guard on there?
Constant Guard is loaded on one, but I don't believe on the other.
Try removing Constant Guard for the one.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I would always remove Constant Guard, but in this case, do that and see if that helps.
Okay,
that tends there's some issues with Constant Guard and those number pads, the number keys.
Oh, really? Okay, Kel.
No, I'm going to walk away from that because he said it was two different types of computers.
Yeah.
I thought maybe a numlock issue might be in play there. Yeah, the only thing I could think of is making sure you had the right language chosen when you installed it, but you did an upgrade, so that should have breezed through.
I think what we may have here is that you've touched on it, Shane, that there are known issues with the Constant Guard software.
There are known issues with the upgrade to Windows 8 and the top number keys not working.
Oh, okay, that's what's no issue.
There are several issues that are causing that problem, one of them being Constant Guard. It's going to be some kind of a software that's installed, whether it be Norton,
right.
McAfee, Microsoft Security, mm-hmm. any of those.
Now, quick question, and Brad, thank you very much for your call. Quick question for you, Shane. Yeah. In terms of security with Windows 8, mm-hmm. are you recommending Microsoft Security Essentials, or is the built-in security in Windows 8 good enough?
Which is the same thing.
It is the same thing, I think.
Yeah, it's perfect. I personally have run that and caught viruses or infections.
So do you put that in on top of Windows 8?
Well, it depends on what you're doing. The Windows 8 will load it.
Okay.
If you're doing the upgrade, it'll ask you to uninstall it so it can reload it itself.
Okay.
So if you have 7 and you're doing an upgrade, it'll go through kind of like it did before, like an advisor,
yep.
and say, hey, this needs to be uninstalled first, and this needs... You went through it.
Right.
Windows Security Essentials is one of those that it wants you to completely remove
uninstall.
First.
Because now is it incorporated in the...
It's got a lot of elements in there, yeah.
Yeah. I was just breezing through here, and I remember what one of the Microsoft personnel said when they came in here. When you have Windows 8, it really never does a shutdown.
Mm.
Okay? It always goes into a hibernation mode. So try a restart, or when you do the shutdown, hold with the shift and the control key, and then try a complete power down on that, because you somehow have to cycle the power. And if you do start shutdown, you're really not rebooting.
Yeah, you
really, right?
You're right. You've got to disconnect the power.
Yeah, you got to pull the battery on the laptop power, or
sometimes I've seen the power plug come back into the wall. So you got to watch Windows.
Okay, let's go to Mary from Troy. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Well, hello and Happy New Year to you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
I am not tech savvy. I would like to do some self-publishing, and I am not happy with my ACER computer, nor am I happy with Microsoft Works. I find it laborious being not tech savvy.
Excuse me, Microsoft Works?
Yes.
Okay, works is what you're on. Okay.
It works. Okay. And I would like to know if I went out to buy some a new laptop, would you recommend buying a Mac? And what kind of software would I buy to do self-publishing and get it going?
Let's start with what software works for self-publishing and then work backwards to the computer brands. Kel, any thoughts?
Well, you could go a number of different ways. You could get Microsoft Office, which is a full, robust version of Microsoft Word.
Is that SOFT Office?
That'd be OFF.
No, it's not Soft Office. No, this is Microsoft Office.
Microsoft.
Yes,
okay.
And there's a version for the Mac called Office for the Mac 2011.
Correct.
Okay.
And that would give you a word processor that is full function and for you to be able to write with. The other choice, if you wanted to go down the free route, would be to download something called OpenOffice, which is open source software. You can pull that off the internet.
Okay.
And install it, and it works very similar to Microsoft Office.
Yeah, and it's free.
And it's free.
Oh, that's great.
That's even better.
Now, and into free.
But now, guys, can you...
I'm not really sure whether or not you need to go out and buy a new computer to get your job done. Maybe you're just using software that's not doing the job for you.
Now, how old is your existing computer right now?
3 years old.
See, that should be fine.
That's to be fine, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You should still be able to do it. I would download on your 3-year-old computer a copy of OpenOffice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And install it. Try that first. See
I
how
will
it works
that.
Out.
Now, we should mention for our listeners that I think coming up, I don't know if it's right now, but coming up in 2013, Microsoft is going to be offering you a subscription-based service for Office. So you won't have to pay $200-some-odd for Office.
Great.
It's right now? Is it on right now, Shane?
Yeah, I can get it right now. Yeah.
Okay, so you can go up to Microsoft, and I think for like $5 a month, isn't it? That's like
it
the bottom line?
It depends on what, the bottom premium. Is $4.95 a month, and you get the word and everything,
Oh, yeah, just the basic words, yeah.
Well, you get the basics, like the what you would do with a home
and
student.
You can store it all.
Well, and you get SkyDrive or web cloud-based storage, so if your computer crashes.
That's something else to consider, Mary, that right now Microsoft, and they're moving in this direction, they're no longer going to be selling these. They will sell them in certain instances, these big packages. But the good news for consumers is that for like $5 a month, now you might consider that not good news because you'll eventually pay for it in the long run. But it's a very simple solution.
Well, I do appreciate your advice, and I've been languishing for a long time. But since 2013 is next week, it's time for me to get going.
Hey, Mary, also, like what Cal said, feel free to go online and Google and do a little searching and find some of these programs like Microsoft Word or Microsoft Office or the Open Office. They all will give you, most of them will give you a 14-day or a 30-day trial.
Yep.
Try them out, see how you like them, and then buy, download maybe two or three, and then pick the one that you
want. Now, Mary, you said self-publishing. What are you trying to publish?
A book.
If you're trying to publish a book, that may be another thing. I would just suggest you Google for how to self-publish. You know what I mean? Look for that because I don't know if there's necessarily software for that, but there are avenues to do that with. And
I will certainly do that.
All right, Mary, Happy New Year to you.
And thank you so much.
Oh, thank you as well. Yeah, because self-publishing really has more to do with somebody who's going to take what you produced. Am I right?
Yes.
And then put it on either iBooks or
Amazon.
But because she said she was using Works,
absolutely.
It didn't have enough robustness to it to
absolutely.
Be able to do what she had
absolutely.
To do.
So she's trying to produce a nice, refined thing, a book, with something that really isn't up to what she's trying to do. But after that, she really should research how to publish that. Okay, back for more of your questions in just a moment. We'll be talking with Joan from Concord, Ohio, in just a moment. Welcome once again to the Internet Advisor, our call-in program. We're delighted, by the way, to be able to do this. We don't often have a chance to get this call-in segment, but with the number, we have our lines full right now, so we'll get right back to answering questions as quickly as we can. One thing we want to do is, Mary, you asked a question about self-publishing, and we talked about the tools to use for creating the word, creating a document or the book. But then, guys, there are some things that we found since then that could help with self-publishing. By the way, all I did was Google e-publishing tools, and boom, all this came up. An article from CNET is called How to Self-Publish an E-Book. So if you just put in How to Self-Publish an E-Book, this article was from June 1st, 2012 by David Carnoy. CNET is excellent.
Right, and a lot of these pieces of software, as Shane was talking about over the commercial break, is basically tailored, you know, indexes what authors want to see or the publishers want to see in a book, you know.
Exactly. It gives you some hints on that. So some of the things that are out there, Amazon Kindle Direct Publishing is there. What were some of the other ones you guys saw? It's quickly for people.
What was the Scribus? Or?
Scribus.
Scribd. Yeah. S-C-R-I-B-D.
No, there's another one.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
There's lots of them out there.
Just a ton of them out there. But anyway, matter of fact, Apple has its own one. What was that, Cal? It was iBooks Author. iBooks Author, you'll find if you were on a Mac platform. Okay, let's go back to our callers then, and let's say hello to Joan from Concord, Ohio. Joan, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hello, gentlemen. First of all, let me thank you for all you do and wish you all a happy and healthy 2013.
Oh, thank you. I will take that wish. Thank you so much. What can we do for you?
Well, I called a while back. I was on AOL for my email and wanted to make a switch and finally did that. I found it to be far more cumbersome than I imagined because I had so many sites that I had, you know, signed up for newsletters or, you know, bill paying and so many things where I had passwords. And it kind of got me thinking about a couple things security-wise. First of all, I switched to Gmail, and now I'm kind of having second thoughts.
Okay.
Partially because I really found it more complicated than I anticipated. And then I just started getting a little queasy security-wise. I'll tell you what happened. I use an iPod Touch regularly to you know, check my email wirelessly and do various things with it. And when I went to go into my new Gmail account, I found that it had actually taken in all of my notes that I had written on my notepad function in my iPod Touch.
Well, of course, it wants to integrate it into your Google Mail account. It wants to be the end
all
be all.
I had no idea, though. You know, apparently that's all by default settings, and I had to go dig settings to, you know, uncheck it, basically. But like I said, it just got me thinking. So your recommendations, first of all, for protecting passwords. I've heard somebody talk about using a software program or encrypted USB media or, you know, would you recommend for that? And what would you recommend really for an email? I know I could go through my internet provider, but I was basically looking for something that would integrate various emails I use for different purposes.
Right. Most of them out there will help you to kind of become a central hub, whether you're using Outlook.com or Gmail or Yahoo or whatever. They're all built to do that kind of thing.
That's actually what I was going to say. Outlook. I mean, Outlook, the Office 365, the Outlook version.
Outlook.com is an excellent one. But essentially, I think it'll be much like Gmail. Wouldn't you say that, Ken? That it, in terms of the way that it functions?
Yeah, pretty much. It'll probably all, they all pretty much will, you know, function the same way. She was also talking about some sort of password program to use. I'm currently using 1Password.
Yeah, you use that. Right.
Which works really, really well.
It's the number one and then password.
And how does that work?
Go ahead.
Well, basically what happens is you download it as an extension to your browser. And what it does is that it as you go to different websites, you can record the password that you have for that website or have it generate a really long encrypted password for you. And then every time you go to that site, you just put in a password that you know, and then it takes it and converts it to that encrypted one. It's also portable in the sense that you can have it on your laptop or your desktop. You can also have it on your iPad or your iPhone, and you'll be able to use it in any configuration you'd want to use it in.
So no, that's a little add-on and for your web browser.
Correct?
Yes. Right, that's a yearly contract. I use one called RoboForm that does exactly. Matter of fact, Cal and I were we reviewed these things almost simultaneously. Does the same thing. It costs $39 a year.
Okay.
Although with the introductory one, I think it's less. Were you going to use something, say something else?
No, I use sticky notes.
I would have, my walls would be plastered.
I know. What do you use, Shane?
I don't use anything. You know, I have a couple passwords in my brain, you know, three, four. Yeah. That
well,
I know that are.
You should really switch it up and change it. And,
well, you know, here's my thought. On the banking stuff, I mean, it's all encrypted stuff.
Yeah, I know that's different.
You know,
yeah.
But it's like if someone wants to log into my Facebook and see my pictures, if they do eventually get it, you know, I'll just change it. I'm not worried about a lot of that stuff because I've already put it out there for people to see.
And what you want to really protect, you've already protected in another way.
Yes, correct. And I have three or four passwords that I change up between, but I keep those always the same.
What?
Right. And what I usually do is add punctuation at the beginning or the end or the middle and throw numbers at the beginning, middle, or the end for all of them. But use that same, you know, password I've been using for the last 25 years.
Just
I hate to say
it
that,
a bit.
And I just changed it up.
And well, one of the things, Cal, I think one password does this. I know RoboForm does. They have a password generator.
Yes.
So you can say, I want 8 characters, I want 16, I want 24, whatever you want, and it'll come up with this random string of numbers and letters. And
oh, yeah, that's nowhere near guessable at any given time. But your master password can be what you know easily to do. Anytime it goes across the internet, though, it goes across as this huge, whopping, crazy password that, you know, would take a long time.
So lots of ways of securing it, but also some basic, just good housekeeping measures. And the other thing, we were talking about this before, guys, if it's a free service out there, your stuff could get used by them.
Well, that's why I even wondered about email. Is there a program that you could use that would integrate email addresses from even different servers that you wouldn't you know, need to go with just one like Gmail?
Well,
Outlook does it.
But I mean, essentially, they're all integrating. I have 5 or 6 accounts, and they're all integrated through
Gmail or whatever.
Gmail was so highly recommended by everyone I spoke with in the business world. And
you just don't like the interface, right?
I can get used to that, but it just when I saw what happened with my notes going in there, it just like that kind of floored me. Like, I have no idea.
It's happening more and more. Let me just wrap up on this and say another thing to try out, Jim, go to Outlook.com and just look at these different interfaces. Yahoo, I understand, since it's now been taken over, being run differently, is simplifying its interface.
Yes,
take a look at these different places. They're all going to be doing a pretty good job of keeping spam away and things like that. So I hope that that helps you into having a much better new year. Thanks so much for being with us. I want to go back out to somebody else here in Mansfield, Ohio. And let's see, we're talking about somebody who wants to find out about bandwidth on TV. Am I right?
Zero Cool here, Foster.
Okay, Zero Cool. How are you doing?
I'm glad you're well and you've recovered from your illness. Kind of tracked your history, and my wife suffered from ITP, which is a similar illness, and the cancer regime, and so we're glad you're well.
Oh, thank you so much. Now, you have a question about what happens to bandwidth on TV?
Well, your prediction, and I'm going to counter your prediction, prediction is that everything's going to go TV on the Internet. My prediction is that the Internet, just like the utility lines, the grid across the United States is going to crash because there's not enough server support and not enough bandwidth to handle the bandwidth of TV and its volume. Mm. And so my question to you is, have you done any looking into that? Because I have, and that's my prediction for this year, if your prediction is right.
Interesting. Go ahead. You brought up an interesting point. And guys, your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I was always surprised. Remember when I first got cable that it was all analog cable? And since then they've gone to digital, which I did not really care for because it's all compressed, and they're always increasing the compression ratios. They're coming up with newer and better techniques to compress not only the digital internet service that I get, but they're also able to compress the channels I get. So that's why I can get 500 stations on my cable.
Does the quality gone down, do you think, in terms?
No, not unless the bad weather goes on. You know, I get a good kick out of that when the cable companies blast the satellite companies, because my cable company, I get those static and pixelations on the screen too, because it's coming from satellite too somewhere at some point.
Yeah, exactly. If you go to Comcast hubs, they got these big dishes that they're taking down the signal line. But the point that Zero Cool brings up here is that we're consuming more information on our phones and everything else,
and we're still consuming it on the same, you know, Cat 6 cable or Cat 5 cable. I mean, it's all, you know.
Yeah, we're.
I have a follow up question.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Hang on the line. We'll come back to you when we come back from the from the break. Okay. Because it is like, for instance, somebody talked the fact that in Kansas City, Google has come in with fiber.
Yeah.
And now Verizon has fiber in some places. That offers a huge garden hose to bring the information.
Opens it up.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for this Internet Advisor. Been a ball being here. Eddie, Shane, Cal, thank you so much for joining us for this marathon Internet Advisor. Been on for now just about 3 hours, and it's been a great time. Thank you to Annie Nichols, by the way, our lady of the phones, who's been answering. That's that pleasant voice. And Rich Lozinski, who spins the dials and makes sure that you're being able to hear us here. By the way, don't forget, on Sunday nights, I post the podcast of this, and we'll have all 3 hours that will be available for you to listen to. Let me go back to our friend Cool Zero from Mansfield. And what I wanted to just to reply to, maybe some of the other guys can pitch in as well. You've asked, I think, a good question. You're thinking maybe this whole internet business is just going to overload and burn out because we're demanding so much data be pushed through it. Our tablets and our phones and everything else under the sun is being required to give us all this video information, et cetera. And your question is, do we have the infrastructure to support it, or is it going to be burning out?
Let me preface my comment. I've been testing bandwidth of various services from the very 1st of December until December 25th.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is across the Internet, the bandwidth has dropped 25% because of the amount of Internet usage during the holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, and I should have prefaced my call.
Yeah, yeah.
To let you know that, and I've been monitoring that, and I've been reporting that to internet service providers across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm seeing is during high peaks of the season, like around Christmas, the bandwidths are actually dropping down. Now, we go TV across the internet, what's going to happen then?
You're raising a very good question because, as you said before, there's a question of, you know, what's going to happen with the servers. Can they handle it? Those hubs that pass the information through was pointed out. I think, Cal, you said UVerse is now putting glass lines in.
Yeah, so UVerse runs fiber up just about up to your house. And then it turns over to copper. But the bottom line is, and me and Ed were talking about this, just like everything else, when we went from dial-up to broadband, they basically updated their servers, they upgraded all their equipment and their switches and their routers to be able to accommodate the growth that
and the redundancy and
coming.
And the DNS lookups.
If they're making money off of it, they're not going to stop making the money off of it.
That's right. They're going to upgrade their infrastructure.
So something, well, I think, will be, if they see that's where the usage is going, they may charge you more for it, but they're going to take care of it so that they can get that product through. Thanks for calling, Zero. I need to move on so we can get some of the other folks in here. Let's see. We have somebody who has a problem with Norton 360. Imagine that. Margie from Rochester, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi. Thank you so much. Happy New Year to all of you.
Thank you very much. So your concern is with Norton 360? What's happening?
No, you said... You sounded a little sarcastic there. I love Norton 360.
Oh, no, pardon me. If it's working for you, wonderful.
Okay. All right. Well, this year, installing the new Norton 360 for 2013, the password remember feature is just gone from what I had before. It doesn't carry it over, or at least that's not what I found. A friend of mine had the same problem. He contacted Norton. They spent hours and hours and remotely tried to take care of it, and they couldn't take care of it.
So Norton 360, is this a browser remember my password or a Norton security protection password that you're talking about?
No. Actually, I just reinstalled the toolbar that has it. I'm not tech savvy at all.
Okay.
But I installed the toolbar. I found out how to do that and get it back on, but it doesn't. It has not held all of my previous passwords.
Interesting. Okay, so let me clarify. So it's not remembering your passwords you've used, or it's not remembering as you're going on and typing in the new passwords?
No, it's remembering the new ones, because what I'm doing is resetting all my passwords
Gotcha.
Now.
When she did the upgrade, it didn't bring over the ones that were already remembered in the old version. That's what she's having a problem
with. Yes, thank you for putting it into words that everybody can understand.
No,
I just know what it's doing.
I
hadn't heard about that.
No,
so.
It sounds like a software glitch, but apparently you've got other people you know of who have had that problem. You noted a little bit of sarcasm in my voice. It's not so much sarcasm as a certain weariness with Norton and their security platforms. Over the years, people have had problems with them because they tend to be rather large and they tend to be resource intensive. I don't know if you've seen that, Shane, in terms of the people that you've worked with.
Yeah, I know. I don't want Margie was going to say something. But
no, that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I see it a lot.
Yeah,
Norton 360 is a huge program. It's just a lot of resources. It does take, if you don't have a fairly new computer, I'd say within the last year or so, that latest, especially the 2013 version, the 12 version, it's big. And I found a lot of problems that people were having if we just removed.
Yeah, and that's it. And I found the same thing. If I just remove the Norton antivirus program, and I'm sure if I was to reinstall it from scratch, it would have been fine. Mm-hmm. Again, for maybe 6 months, maybe a year, until something else happened.
Margie, what operating system are you running? Windows 7?
No, I think it's XP.
Okay.
I really can't tell you. I don't know.
Well, I've heard that, now you've probably paid money for your Norton service, so that's part of the challenge. But there are, Avast is being spoken of as being very good, and AVG, our old friends at AVG, are once again being highly recommended.
But those, a lot of those are ad-based.
I think we're going beyond what we need to do.
Right.
She's okay with Norton. She wants to stick with Norton. Right. Her only problem was that she lost her passwords when she did an upgrade. And my gut guess is during that upgrade, somewhere down the line, it may have had a checkbox saying, do you want to retain your settings?
Right.
That checkbox probably got missed, so it sent it back to an initialized setting. You got to reinstall. You're just going to have to put in your passwords all over again and just move forward.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yes, but now, okay, so going on a different direction here, so then what would be the best, or what are you suggesting for a good security on my computer?
Oh, for security or password?
Just the
general
whole
security
package, since Norton is so
big,
consuming.
Yep, and especially with XP, and if you're running a lot of RAM on it.
I'm not even sure if Norton 360 supports XP, so it really needs to know.
Maybe it's 7.
Oh, okay, that's right. Whatever you're running, okay.
So,
first of all, you're paying good money for it. As I said again, Avast, A-V-A-S-T.
If she paid good money for it, if it's been working for her, with the exception of the fact that this past leave it alone.
That's why he has white
hair. Why are we
hair
trying to
do.
Fix it?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks
so
for keeping it real,
Cal. Maybe call you next year when I'm ready to do something else.
Yes.
Okay, call us back next year.
Yes.
We'll get you crazy.
Do it again.
Have a happy Mark. Holiday.
Yeah,
we'll
because
talk
years ago I went through the thing. How can I cut my expenses? I don't need the pay per view channels, and I don't need the Showtime or ESPN, and I don't need to pay for antivirus program. And I could save myself, $700 a year if I do that. Mm. I'm paying $100 for antivirus, and you're paying $600 for all those additional cable channels. That's a no-brainer, so I don't pay for antivirus software. I get the free stuff.
Yeah, but she had already paid for it. She's already in the till.
I know. She's made that decision, and she can stick
so
with it.
So next year,
she can,
when her subscription comes up, then we can fix her.
Let's see if we can get one more in here. We've got Joyce from Fenton. Joyce, can we get a quick question out of you, Bobby?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. My computer is very, very slow. I have a Dell Vista laptop, and the Adobe Flash Player crashes every 5 minutes.
The Flash Player on this. Now, how old is your computer?
3.5.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, go to Adobe's website and download the uninstaller for Flash for your computer.
Okay.
Uninstall Flash from the computer, reboot it, and then go back to the Adobe website and download Flash again, and that should fix it for you.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and I hope that makes it a very happy new year for you.
Happy new year to you guys.
All right, take care. Have a good one. Hey, guys, thank you so much for being here for this long program and for doing a great job of helping people. And I will look forward to your predictions this coming week. And, Shane, you will now have yours recorded as well.
I predict I will forget.
No. We'll make sure you remember it. And Cal, I'm sure you're going to have an equally outrageous one as the one you had this year, that Apple was going to buy Verizon.
I predict that Gary is going to become president.
There we go. All right, guys, have a safe and a very joyful holiday celebration here, and happy new year to you. And we will see you in the coming year with the Internet Advisor. If you want to find us, you'll find us at internetadvisor.net. You can also find us at the Internet Advisor Facebook page as well. Thanks so much, and we'll look for you in the new year. Have a happy one.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor, where since 1998, we've been helping non-geeks to find answers to their questions and to make their journey on the Internet a much more enjoyable one. If you have any questions you'd like answered directly by our team, please go to our homepage at InternetAdvisor.net and fill in the Contact Us forum, or join one of the forums that are there on the Internet Advisor. And don't forget, the toolkit is available with Ed's excellent advice, full of all sorts of information and free software to help you. So don't forget to visit us on Facebook and like our site so that you can catch all the news that we post there during the week. The door is always open for you at InternetAdvisor.net, on our Facebook page, and through Twitter. Safe surfing, and we'll see you again soon.